This is Sunday Focus, a weekly public affairs program that looks at the topics affecting our society and the people who are making a change in the community each and every day. The people who have vision for the next generation. Sunday Focus presents new challenges for us, keeping you informed with topics of local and regional interest. Now the host of Sunday Focus, Christine Manica.
Hello and good morning. Welcome back to another edition of Sunday Focus. We are continuing our conversation with the organization called The Freedom. They are at the forefront of helping victims of sex and labor trafficking navigate a new path. It's not an easy journey, but the hope is through education, others can help those who are being trafficked in our area and state. Previously, CEO and founder of Call the Freedom, Becky Rasmussen, joined the program to tell us more about the organization. And today, we're back with Becky, and this time she brought a survivor with her. Her name is Mary, and after her long journey, she has been part of Call the Freedom's mission. Good morning, ladies. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. And it's such a pleasure to have Mary here today. I have the honor of introducing her. I've known Mary since 2016. Her full name is Mary Jackson. She's currently on staff at Call to Freedom as our Survivor Service and Program Coordinator, and has actually been with us since 2016, but only full-time in the last year. And the gifts that Mary brings to us as an organization are many. Her insight, her voice, how she impacts the community. We have what we call a continuum of care model that has been vetted and really developed by Journey of the Survivors. Absolutely. And Mary has been the key to that and has been involved with the development of our programming since day one. And so I'm really excited to have her be able to share her voice. It has been a privilege to walk alongside her, to hear her strength and how she's impacting our community and bringing hope to those that are feeling hopeless in situations. And so I have the honor of introducing Mary Jackson.
Hi, Mary.
Well, hello.
Well, hello there.
Wow, that was quite the introduction, Becky. Thank you. So, yes, my name is Mary. I'm grateful to be here today. I truly am. To share part of my journey, my calling, I would say, and the work I do at Call to Freedom, and how we help others, people who have been victimized by such a horrific crime, and to be identified and receive the services. And to know that they're not alone. I think it's really important because when you walk a journey alone, you just feel very helpless and hopeless and not loved. And this community is amazing, I must say. I love the community when they come to our events, what they do to help survivors and the organization. So I'm just very, very grateful. So thank you.
No, thank you. We're so excited to have you. And like I mentioned to Becky the last time we talked, this is going to be one of the harder conversations that we've had on this program, but it's all about continuing the mission of Call to Freedom and to raise that awareness. So, Mary, I want to start at the beginning of your story. Tell us where you're from and just a little bit about yourself.
So I'm from Sioux Falls. I was raised here. I went to a local Catholic high school, graduated. I would say I was probably pretty typical, whatever that means for a youth. It's not that I wasn't made some poor choices when I was in junior high and high school. But I mean, I had friends, I did activities, I got good grades. I think what it really was is sometimes your family dynamic. My father has passed away, but we did come to a mutual respect for each other, that he just really made me feel not loved or wanted within the family. So if you're being told every day, you'll never amount to anything. You're not smart enough. You're not pretty enough. And what are you going to do with your life? I think that really impacts the youth. And you're always searching. So I was always searching for love and acceptance, to belong, just because I didn't feel like my family didn't love me. But that just doesn't mean that they didn't love me. It just means that was my thoughts and how I was treated. So that was a big vulnerability for me.
Yeah.
And I did leave the state of South Dakota. And so I was very vulnerable when I left the state of South Dakota to be a nanny on the East Coast. I just thought everybody was super nice and there weren't bad people out there. And I was going outside the borders of South Dakota. But I did find out that there is a lot of evil out there. And I did meet very bad people, horrible people. But I turned to them in a desired and to be accepted by them. I do explain, I did get pregnant when I was on the East Coast as a nanny. I had a boyfriend, and I did get pregnant. I did call my family. I did let my boyfriend know at the time. My boyfriend at the time said, if you want to stay with me, you're going to have an abortion. My family, I called them, and my dad said, you can't come home. You're an embarrassment to the community, to the family. You're unwed, and you're pregnant. So I did make a decision to turn to this new group of friends I made. And those friends happened to be from Colombia, South America. But they were very kind to me at the time. They told me they were the only ones that cared about me. They would take care of me. And that's where really that bond started, where I felt that's where I was going to belong. And I stayed with them. I did give the child away for adoption. But that strong bond with them had already occurred, and my vulnerability just got more and more with them. And I don't think even people trying to talk to me to say, you're really smart, you knew better, you knew not to get hit, you knew not to, if somebody raped you, to report it. But I think that's understanding trauma, and that's understanding who's doing it to you, what happened, who's going to respond, and what are you going to do? And I really did not know what to do, even though I knew in the beginning kind of like, oh, he hit me. But then he said, I'll never do it again, that he would get help. And he brings me flowers, buys me clothes. We changed a lot of things up, and I trusted him. And so I was already, the wiring of my brain was already there. Come to find out, as the time progressed, this would be kind of that grooming stage. Mm-hmm. I like to call it the manipulation. For me, it started out as domestic violence. Then you have that, which is very difficult to talk about, when you are raped, when you are gang raped, when you are confined, mentally and physically confined, and all your basic needs, your living expenses are all being paid. A lot of people don't leave, which is the harsh reality of it. And it does take a lot to get up and leave. So I was already there, and then the sex trafficking had already started. People say, well, how did you not understand that this wasn't right? Because I owed. This was my family. This is what had to be done. And I just didn't question it. I was not on the streets. I have some friends that would consider themselves sex workers. And I'll say to them, okay, we're going to have a discussion on that, because that's going to cross over real quick into being trafficked. And so I wasn't on the streets, but I would be sold in a game of cards. If a drug deal had gone good, not me knowing, or a drug deal gone bad, or somebody owed somebody, or you went to a party that night, and then you were made to go with this person or this person, and you did what you were told because you knew the repercussions if you didn't. And then really, where were you going to end up going? If you tried to say, no, I'm not going to, yes, you would get a beating or whatever they would do to you physically and mentally. Or if you'd say, well, I'm going to go to a shelter, I'm going to go here or there. Where were you going to go, really? I didn't even have documentation. Even when I moved to South America, they took all my documentation. But in Miami and Florida, I didn't have the driver's license, the ID, the birth certificate. I didn't have anything. I don't think it really crossed my mind either, because I was already in that group without understanding I was in that group. So I did marry one of those evil men, and we did have a child together. We moved to Colombia, South America, and life just changed even worse. Like, if I don't know how it could get worse, but it did. And then I started to see some things, like, it is wrong to get hit. It is wrong to be assaulted. it is wrong for somebody to buy the sex. I didn't get any money. People say, well, didn't you get money for any of that? The answer is no. I didn't get a dime. And when I wanted to leave, there was a point after I had my son. So I did get pregnant with this horrific man I was married to. And I wanted to leave. And they told me, no, you can't leave. But I was going to. I was like ready. I don't know what came over me. Something did. It's probably a whole separate session in itself about talking about this.
Yep.
And I wanted to go. And finally, the people came to me. So this would have been the Medellin cartel out of Colombia, South America during the 80s and the 90s. I don't have to name names. People can kind of figure it out for themselves who's a part of the cartel. And they said to me, we are going to take your two-month-old son. So my son was 2 months old at the time. And you will fly to JFK Airport. Someone will be waiting for you. They're going to bring you to a house. And there's going to be a shipment of furniture in your name, your social security number. And you're going to sign for that. And then we're going to let you go back to the airport, fly back to Colombia, get your two-month-old son, and you can leave. And that's exactly what I did. I didn't think twice about it. I did try to reach out. I probably don't have to name names on that, but I tried to reach out for some help down in that country. There just wasn't a lot of help, especially since my son was born in Colombia. So we had to follow the laws of that land. So I did what I was told, knowing, oh, this is my way to get out. When I flew to JFK Airport and I went to that house, actually, when the furniture was delivered, it was the DEA and FBI and all these people swooshed around me. And I think I look back and I remember just saying, my son, my son. And most people that were there that day, I don't know who, can't quite remember everybody, said, we already know what happened to you. But yes, I was arrested. I look back, and Becky might laugh at this a little bit too, because I can laugh at this right now because I've already been through the journey of it. So I said, well, you were arrested with 500 kilos of cocaine. And I looked at the DEA like, is that a lot? So I didn't have an addiction. I have never tried coke a day in my life. The cartel did not want me addicted to anything. They controlled me in other ways. So I didn't understand that. Coke was not a part of my life. And then they said, well, it was 97% pure. And I thought, oh, amen. It wasn't 100. And they explained, it doesn't get any purer than that. I thought, I don't know that. So there were a lot of questions like, what happened? What's going on with this girl? Things don't add up. I don't know who was all arrested with it in other countries, and people fled and people didn't know what I knew. And it was a really difficult time when I look back. But I did serve that federal time. I did plead guilty. I know now it really wasn't a choice that I had, that the choice was already given to me, that I was forced to. But I pled guilty at a two-month-old son down in Colombia. I didn't understand everything that was happening. And then when I served my time, I did come home. People were very, very helpful. I have to tell you, I ran across some amazing people, and it makes me cry because I think at the time I didn't understand how amazing people are. And I had some great law enforcement. But again, I do get it because that was the case, and I did plead guilty. But when I came home, it was more, how are we going to get her son out of Colombia? So I had some great help with amazing people, whether it was in the state of New York, the state of South Dakota, people in Colombia. I don't even know them, and I probably don't want to know how it all happened. But we do have wonderful people. And the DEA, the law enforcement, FBI, anyone involved in all that. Nobody asked for any notoriety. They just wanted my child home. And I think when my dad and I flew to JFK Airport the day that my son flew on that airplane, here's this little blonde-haired, most adorable two-year-old come running through the customs. And we sat there and I looked at him and I said, "That's my son." And we just started crying. And here's this little guy, he's two, and he can only speak Spanish, of course. Mm-hmm. But he looked at me, and I looked at him, and he threw up, of course, because he's nervous. My dad was there, and he looked at me, and I said to him, "I'm your mom," in Spanish. And he looked at me, and he said, "Mama?" And I said, "Yes." And then we were encircled by law enforcement and running through JFK Airport because we didn't know all that was going to happen to myself or my son. There's a lot of behind the scenes that was going on at the time. And we went to a hotel, secluded hotel. People stood outside, watched guard, and the next day we flew back to South Dakota. And it was quite the journey, but the people behind that to say, "We value you, we need your son here. What happened to you was horrific." But then nobody ever used the word human trafficking. No one said what happened to me was trafficking. So it was a big struggle when I first, you know, I was a new mom. I had people were very helpful, but I didn't understand myself. I didn't understand the trauma I went through. I didn't get, it was hard to hold a job. It was hard to have relationships. It was difficult. I didn't have a drinking problem before or during. No, I did not do the illicit drugs or coke. I bellied up to the bar for a couple of years because I couldn't handle myself. I usually responded to anything happening to me by getting in my car and driving to Seattle. I needed to get out. So those are your responses when you have that type of trauma and the complexity of the trauma. So you have more than one person you have that trauma with. You have it with the traffickers. You have it with other people that are in that organization. And you also have it with the buyers. People don't talk about the buyers. And then thinking, oh, the buyers are going to, someone's going to get you out, is going to save you. Well, there's only one who saves, right?
Yeah.
So there's this complexity behind that, and you don't understand it. So now you're getting help. I'm having some therapy. I have wonderful people in the community, still struggling. All of a sudden, I meet Becky Rasmussen from Call to Freedom by a mutual friend. And I am so humbled and grateful by what Call to Freedom does. I would not be where I'm at today. I know it inside of me. That when we got connected years later, so I walked the journey alone for many years. And finally, I found some people that got me. I would go to their original, kind of like a safe house. I would go in and talk with the ladies, people who have been victimized by sex trafficking. And I just got them. They would be like, say something. I'd be like, "Yeah, I get exactly what you're talking about. Let's not make that response. Let's go get therapy. Let's go do this. Let's." So we try to navigate what, because our responses are just not healthy. But we don't know they're not healthy because that's how we would respond. And finally, there was one day I remember in particular, something came over me and I said, "I was trafficked." And memories flood you sometimes. But the memories that flood you may not always connect, but that's why you need help and therapy and the wiring of your brain. And then understanding who my traffickers were. Just in general, knowing like your husband was your trafficker, but knowing the people I thought cared about me, and you'd see them on CNN, like, wait, I know this person as so-and-so. It's like a nickname. People use nicknames. I didn't know them as the person that was up on the screen on TV. I'm like, oh my goodness, who are these people? And that was a really nice guy, I thought. And with help and therapy, I realized, no, evil. But that day that I realized I'd been trafficked, I called Becky up immediately. I think I called up Raleigh Samp, who is somebody, I always pay honor to him and grateful for what he has done within the community to gather people, to get me home and to also get my son home. I called up, I think, a couple of pastors and Father Christopher. And I said, I was trafficked. And everyone's response was the same. Yes. It was like I needed to know that I was. I needed to start that journey of healing and understanding and empowering myself and getting help. And then what was I going to do with that? Because it had affected me for so many years. And I didn't want to give that power to anyone ever again. But boy, was it an eye-opening experience. And from that day forward, something changed. There was also a time I was in my family room. I was just struggling. And I didn't know what to do, where to go, who to turn to. It was probably pretty close to meeting Call to Freedom. I sat there in my living room or dining room or living room floor. I just put my arms out. I cried and I cried on that floor. And I said, God, just take me. I'm no good to anyone. I'm worthless. Everything I'd been hearing as a child was coming out. Everything I heard during my trafficking was coming out. And I said, I'm just no good to anyone. Show me or do something, because this is a moment in my life. Was I going to take my life or was I going to live?
I can just say, sitting here, if you're just listening, we're being joined by Mary. She is an overcomer, as she likes to call herself, and a survivor. And she's also with Call the Freedom. Becky Rasmussen, the CEO and founder of Call the Freedom, is also joining us in the studio. I have no words. There's a reason why I just kind of let this talk and let it play out, because your story is unbelievable. I just want to say I'm sorry for what you've gone through from the start of your childhood to the very end of it all. I am deeply sorry, and just, it's unbelievable. And now you're here, and now you are a voice, you are an advocate, and you have been using that voice through your work with Call to Freedom, because now you were a part of it, but now officially you're employed with Call to Freedom. And I just want to hear a quick thing about what you do with the organization.
Yes, I'm the Survivor Services and Program Coordinator. It took me a little bit of time to get there, but first I came in as a volunteer. I tried to understand what the women and men are also trafficked. Mm-hmm. So let's never forget about that. And what are the needs? How do people start that journey? How do they know that people care and love them unconditionally when all we know is conditional? And there's an organization out there, and I work now full-time at Call to Freedom. Thank goodness I answered that call eventually. And to me, it's not work, but I come in there and I walk alongside somebody who's been victimized, but they're no longer a victim, and they don't want that mentality. They want to be a survivor. They want to thrive. They want to overcome. They want a job. They want so many things. How do we get them there? And that's what Call to Freedom does with their continuum of care model. So if you go to calltofreedom.org, you can learn about our continuum of care, all the services that we provide. You can see who's on staff. You can see what we all do. I would never have been here as long as I have since 2016 if I did not believe in Call to Freedom and their mission and what they do. And also working with the community partners. So we'll come in and I'll walk alongside that person that client, that individual, to humanize them also. And to say, you are worth it. Let's walk the journey together. You're going to have to walk it. It's tough. It's tough. I'm going to meet you halfway. You go halfway. And deep down inside of you, just go a little further. Because we're there for you. We're always going to be there. It's not always going to be a straight uphill, like a day full of roses. Because you're going to have to figure out for your trauma, trafficking, and then your own healing. Because it's your journey, your story. You have a voice, whether you want to share it or not, but you are worth it and that you matter. And our community and Call to Freedom shows that and sets a wonderful example.
Good message right there. Again, it's Mary, Call to Freedom, and also Becky Rasmussen, the CEO and founder of Call to Freedom. This is the first time in all my years of doing this program that I just had no words. I had no questions. I was speechless. And I think your story and Call to Freedom, it just goes to show that it does happen here in South Dakota. And there's a reason why we're continuing this conversation, is to educate people and to let them know that this really does happen. And Becky, I know your work is not done. And Mary's is an example of that.
Absolutely. It's a privilege, to work alongside Mary. But when survivors come in and they think that they have no way out of a hopeless situation, and Mary represents hope because she lived out a situation that majority of people don't. And so we are very committed to being able to reach as many individuals that are in human trafficking and commercial exploitation as we can. And we're so grateful that you give this a voice, because so many people out there don't know their victimization. And this may just touch somebody right where they're at and realize, I'm one of those people. And so the opportunity to share and give education, we're very grateful for the opportunity.
Absolutely. We're grateful to have you both on the program. And if anybody who is listening to this right now is like, hey, that's my story, or I went through something similar like that, is there a phone number they can call? Your website again for people listening?
Absolutely. If you are a victim or somebody who identifies with Mary's story in some way, the phone number is 605-759-3565. If you are in the community and you identify something that maybe doesn't look right and you want to report that and get that to law enforcement, it's 1-888-373-7888. And if you want to know more about Call to Freedom, our website is a great opportunity to learn more. It's at calltofreedom.org.
Wonderful. Mary, before we wrap this up, one last thing you want to say, anything at all?
Wow, I think I have lots to say sometimes.
You should make a movie.
Oh, okay, here we go. So anyways, I will touch on that. You always wonder, when is your work done? I don't think my work is ever done. I think this is something that I need to do and to say, and that it's out there to shed light on it, to empower people, to educate people, and that it does happen. So yes, I do have a script about my journey. And it's really, it isn't about me. It is about what happens and what the reality is and what the truth is. And so I finally did get that script done. Some parts need to be added. Previously, I did have some offers, but I just did not find the right person yet, the right producer, the right individual that would take that to have the truth be told.
Yeah, it will come. Give it time whenever you're ready. It's whenever you're ready. Again, it's Becky Rasmussen and the overcomer, Mary, of Call to Freedom. This is only the second part of our conversation. And I believe the next time we talk, Becky, we're going to have more of a legal aspect of it, which is way above my pay grade, by the way.
We'll have some experts that are working in the field and really pioneering this work on the law enforcement and prosecution side.
Wonderful. Ladies, it was great to talk to you this morning. And Mary, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much. You have no idea. Thanks.